Move approval.
Okay, second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Approved. We also have approval minutes to take care of from July 27th, 2017. Have motion to approve minutes.
Move approval.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, and those are approved. Well, good morning, everyone. We have one item on today's agenda, but I wanted to make a couple remarks here. First of all, the Safety Committee had a chance on September 20th to meet with the Riders Advisory Council, who also has a Safety and Security Committee. We had a very interesting meeting. There's lots of areas of collaboration between what the Riders Advisory Council Committee and the Safety Committee are interested in, and we had a very rewarding meeting, and we want to
go ahead and make sure in the future that we coordinate with this committee to see if there's other areas of collaboration. So that was a very valuable event for us. Today, we have one item on the agenda, but I'd also like to ask Mr. Lavin to comment on the issue of the 7,000 cars that we've heard about. Just a short comment on that, and then we'll go on to Metro's confidential closed call reporting system. And this is where, just as we saw on the safety minute, this allows the boys to voluntarily, as the name states, confidentially report close call events without fear of discipline. And in 2013, Metro was the first rail transit agency in the nation to implement such a system. The program was expanded to Metrobus in 2016, and Mr. Lavin's going to give us a briefing on it and the trends that are reported under it in this program. So, again, I'll turn it over to Mr. Lavin, and if you give us just a few words about the issues with 7,000 cars, and then we'll move on to the confidential close call reporting system. Mr. Lavin.
Okay, thank you, Bob. I'd also like to introduce Andrea Burnside, who will be co-presenting on the close call reporting system. To answer your question about the 7K, talking specifically to the incident where an employee received a shock, when we're looking into this event, it's under investigation. The preliminary findings are there were three previous incidents. In those events, there were no employee injuries. They were actually identified to be malfunctions of this component, which is a grounding brush. And the purpose of the grounding brush is you take the positive traction energy, it goes through a motor, it goes through this grounding bus to the axle, and then it returns to the traction substation. So it's that piece that mates the axle to the propulsion system that was failing. When we had identified the previous incidents, it appears that the braid on the brush is chafing against the cover, and there are other instances where the metal braid itself is pulling out of its holder. So in order to address this, we are coming up with three separate EMIs that will be a long-term fix to this, to make a deeper cover, to insulate the braid itself, and to look at the fastening hardware. As an interim measure, we've modified the inspection procedure, which once a train comes into the barn, there is no energy on the train. Those covers are inspected to ensure that there's no hazard to the employee. Once it's confirmed that there's no hazard, then they'll conduct a normal PMI. I want to emphasize that where this component is physically located is beneath the undercarriage of the train, and therefore it does not pose any threat to the riding public.
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. And you'll give us a full briefing on it once all the mitigations are in place and the problem solved, I would assume.
You would assume correctly.
Thanks. Confidential close call reporting.
Okay, today's presentation, we're going to start with the purpose. This presentation this morning will highlight the key components of the close call program and update the committee about the program safety, actions, oversight, and monitoring, and other activities. The last update to this committee on this topic was in late 2015. As some of you are new members of the board, we thought it would be appropriate to reintroduce it. The program is a product of a management-labor partnership. The partners are WMATA Management, Local 689 representatives, Local 922 representatives, and representatives from the Bureau of Transportation Statistics. Next slide, please. Metro and its union share a common goal of improving safety at the organization. The confidential close call transit reporting system gathers data about safety issues that might not otherwise have been captured. Confidential employee reports lead to preventive safety actions. This program was developed in response to an NTSB recommendation from June 22, 2009, following the Fort Totten incident. The NTSB recommended that WMATA create a non-punitive system of reporting non-punitive reporting program to collect and review reports from employees in all divisions within the organization and share the results of those reviews. At the direction of the general manager at the time, management worked with Ms. Jeter and other 689 leaders to reach an agreement on the program components and requirements. Together, the parties elected the Bureau of Transportation Statistics within the USDOT to take the product, to take individual employee reports. The program agreement mirrored similar rail close call pilots underway at the time for Amtrak, New Jersey Transit, Union Pacific, and other freight railroads. It was rolled out to the rail and infrastructure employees in 2013 and then to bus employees in 2016. At that time, Teamsters Local 922, representing the Landover Bus Depot, also joined as a partner to the agreement. While Metro has instituted many safety initiatives to report safety concerns to supervisors through the safety hotline and to the Office of the Inspector General, close call reporting provides another avenue of voluntary reporting in a confidential manner without fear of retaliation. BTS protects the employee confidentiality by applying the Confidential Information Protection and Statistical Efficiency Act, CIPC. The U.S. statute prohibits disclosure or release of non-statistical purposes of information collected under the Pledge of Confidentiality. Willful and knowing disclosure of protected data to unauthorized persons is a felony and punishable up to 5 years of imprisonment and up to $250,000 fine. The significance of this fine has assured our employees that we take confidentiality of their reports seriously. Eligible close call incidents will not be subject to discipline, but the knowledge of their existence is critical in maintaining and changing the safety culture. The program doesn't eliminate employee accountability for specific serious rule violations. Examples are, on the rail side of the house, station overruns exceeding one door leaf, exceeding limits of an absolute or permissive block, red signal violation, wrong side door openings. On the bus side of the house, items that are not excluded are failing to secure a bus or a rollaway bus. What is not eligible is criminal offenses, traffic safety violations, falsified information, among others. So there is some level of accountability. It's not a get-out-of-jail-free card if you report the close call. The definition of a close call is a situation or circumstance that's had the potential for safety consequences but did not result in an adverse safety event. If an incident resulted in an accident, injury, or illness, medical treatment, damage to vehicles or property, release of hazardous materials, it is not a close call. I'm going to turn it over to Andrea now to give you some more information.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So what you see here is the reporting tools, and this is what employees would see when they go to the website. So basically, they have two opportunities, rail and bus employees who are eligible to participate, two avenues to report. The first one would be they can access the BTS website, which you can see here is outside the WMATA Metro Web, and they can initiate their written report within the required time limits. And those time limits are that they have within 16 hours of experiencing a close call event to initiate the report, and then they need to complete the report within 24 hours. And we provided that timeline, you know, based on negotiations with the union and employee schedules and such. Because many of our employees, particularly those eligible to report, work in the field and don't always, or they aren't sitting at desktops to make a written report, we also provide them the opportunity to make a phone call to initiate the report. But ultimately, they do need to have an interview with the BTS safety analyst who will go over the circumstances of the incident and ask them a number of questions. As I mentioned, the reporting website is outside the WMATA area and it's owned by BTS. There is a link to it on our Metro website. The website includes a number of tools. There's an instructional how-to video, which is different than the video you saw. It's kind of walking people through, like, here's how it works. We also have a number of brochures that summarize how the program works for bus and rail employees. And also on that website, we have the quarterly reports, which we'll talk about a little bit further on, that let them know what actions management has taken. So the next slide is on program promotion. We have a lot of turnover and movement of our employee workforce, and so regularly promoting, we can't do like a one-and-done approach to promoting the program because we have a lot of new employees coming. We have people retiring. We have people moving into different positions. And we found that in talking to any group of employees, there's often quite a number of them who are, they sort of know about the program, but they're unfamiliar with the specifics of the program, so constant promotion is essential. And what we do in partnership with our union leadership as well as BTS is we catch all new employees coming into the organization through the new employee orientation. There's a segment of that where the program manager talks about the program and answers questions. We also have a number of training classes going on all the time, train operators, bus station managers, train operators, so we get in on those classes. We also have, obviously, the new bus operator classes, bus refresher classes, so we're looking at all opportunities to have a place on the agenda of those classes to talk about the program. We're always looking for new groups of employees who aren't regularly reporting and making sure that we get out to them. In particular, sometimes more challenging to get to are the employees who don't always report to one location in the morning, go directly to their work site, so being able to reach out to them and let them know about the program. It's been very effective to have the union also present as a partner, visibly present when talking to the employees. And so BTS has done a number of those recently, for example, working with the superintendents at our Shepherd's Parkway Bus Division, 4 Mile Run and such, to engage with the employees who are working in those areas. I mentioned the brochures that we have and worksite videos. And we also have posters that are up in the divisions and worksites. And one of the key components, because when an employee makes a report, management doesn't know who they are because that's protected by confidentiality. So the way that we let employees know that we heard you and we've taken action is we have a quarterly newsletter that goes out that talks about like what their concern was, what action is being taken, who's responsible, and by when. And those are distributed by management through various avenues, directly to employees as well as by the unions. So this graphic here shows the workflow with different swim lanes and different players involved in the reporting process. The video that you already saw kind of walked you through it, so this may be a little repetitive, but basically an employee experiences a close call event or incident. They contact BTS within the required time frame, which I mentioned is 16 hours, and they have to complete the report within 24 hours. BTS then confirms eligibility and sends an employee a confirmation receipt. So eligibility, they know that there's a list of employees who are eligible to report. Not everyone is eligible, but essentially are 689 and 922 employees and the supervisors of those employees. BTS then is going to contact the employee to conduct a confidential interview to get more information. The BTS analyst is going to do an initial assessment of the root cause of the incident, remove any identifying factors, and provide to a joint committee of management and unions what the incident was. And that joint committee is called the peer review team. The peer review team meets periodically, sometimes monthly, sometimes every other month. There is a separate one for rail to look at rail incidents, and there's a separate one for bus to look at bus incidents. PRT then reviews and agrees on the root cause of the incident and then recommends what we call preventative safety action. They're empowered to act in many cases, although some recommendations may need to be forwarded for approval to the COO and Mr. Lavin, the Chief Safety Officer, for approval. The actions are then monitored for implementation, and we have a slide on that to come next. And then we regularly report, BTS regularly provides a report to WMATA summarizing reporting activity, risks, and actions taken.
Just to give you a flavor of some of the past items that were reported, and these are the areas that we've got improvements on, which is better train operator communication, better training processes for the flagging procedures, identification of radio outages, deficiencies, improved RWP training, environmental improvements for personnel in the shops. In this specific incident, they had configured a stinger system that when a train came into a barn, every alarm on every track would go off simultaneously, so it was like a deafening sound for the employees. We went in and looked at it through the close call system. We had them segregate the tracks so you don't get this total alarming of the entire system. Then we had them reduce the decibel levels. So I just want to give you some of the concrete examples of what the calls were and what was done to abate them. On one of the older bus fleets, we had identified through the close call system that the fare box itself was creating a visual obstruction, which could lead to accidents because you couldn't see around this box. There was a handful of the buses. We retired them and replaced them. Next slide, Chris. So some of the actions that we're working through right now is establishing positive communication procedure, and that's in the context of work train operators. So that'll lead to derailments, that'll lead to red signal overruns, or just, you know, not good work practices at the work site. We've actually identified a set of headphones that give you wireless communication that we're vetting out right now. Other items we identified is the need for optimal boarding areas at some of our stations that are going to have to be eventually rehabilitated through a capital program. And the retrofitting of high-mounted mirrors on 351 buses. And lastly, improving congestion on unsafe turns for bus operators. So this is specific to the F8 route, and where we identified that because of people not adhering to traffic signage, that it was creating a hazard for our bus operator to negotiate these narrow streets. We have greater law enforcement now. We have improved signage. We've increased some of the lengths of the bus stops in order to facilitate that. We actually tried putting shorter buses in there, but due to overcrowding, we have to go back to a longer bus. So these are some of the areas we're working on right now. All right, as far as oversight and monitoring this, there's an executive steering committee. As a matter of fact, we met yesterday with the leadership of the union, and we go over the process itself, and we jointly decide what are ways that we can improve it. So we're looking at some modifications for the MOU for next year, which still have to be agreed upon. The next level, which I think Andrea went through a lot of it, is the actual PRT committees, where these things are vetted out. One of the things I identified when I got here that I was a little concerned about is that every decision had to go up to an executive level. So I embedded higher level managers in there to start getting more accountability at the lower levels, to get employees to take accountability, to get them to make decisions, and to get them to do better problem solving. And that seems to be yielding some fruit. Not every minor incident comes up to the top of the food chain anymore. So we keep a defined list of items. We get periodic updates. As Andrea said, one of the other things I did is I brought this to the Executive Safety Committee. The union attends those meetings, and this is now discussed, you know, with the top-level management of the organization so that we get progress on these issues, we get accountability, and if people see that if they make a complaint and it's acted upon and it's resolved, that's how you get better reporting within the system. So I'll turn it over to Andrea again for the next actions going forward.
Okay, thank you. I mentioned that the VTS is working on the annual report, and that's a report that will become public, and they will come in front of this committee to talk about the results of the report. It's going to be a look back over the program since inception back to 2013, and that will talk about overall kind of trends, safety culture issues and such. Right now, because it's a statistical level report, it has to go through the federal process of approval. So we're waiting for that to be completed, and we're hoping to get it on the agenda for November, but it remains to be seen when that gets approved at the federal level for distribution. I'll also mention, you know, constant promotion is essential by management and union leadership. And we're striving to constantly build knowledge about the program as well as trust in the program, because basically, you know, when you get up in front of a group of employees, you're going to find that a number of them know nothing about the program. Some of them know a lot about it, and others know nothing about it. And then there's the employees who do not trust the program and are very vocal and will speak out that they do not trust the confidentiality. And then so we question them, why don't you trust it, and try to address some of their concerns. So that's essential to constantly talk about it. We haven't had the level of reporting that was initially hoped for in the outset of the program. Given it was a new program, we didn't know exactly what to expect, but based upon other close call reporting programs, we hoped for a higher level of reporting. So we're still trying to impact that. We're still trying to get more employees to step forward, because as a chief performance officer, I've always felt that a measure of success is a lot of reporting. People feel confident in the program, and they want to report things that they see. Our current, as Mr. Levin mentioned, our current agreement is expiring at the end of this calendar year within the next few months, and we're already talking with the union as we started yesterday at the steering committee about some modifications to the MOU, particularly that's going to empower the peer review team to take action and make decisions, as well as some other things.
Okay, so is there any questions, comments?
Thank you very much. I had a couple of questions, then I'll go to the committee members and then the rest of the board members. This is a very interesting program, and FRA also uses a confidential close call program with a lot of the commuter rails. One of the things that has to happen is there has to be a memorandum of understanding with labor unions to get on board. Can you either Ms. Burnside or Mr. Lavin, can you characterize the level of cooperation or the level of acceptance that you're getting from the labor unions here at Washington Metro?
I believe at the executive level you have the full buy-in because we do have a MOU. That's how the program started, so that's very defined. I think the problem is in this culture is that there's a real fear of retaliation, and that takes a long time to eradicate. So as we work on that and as we show progress on these complaints, I'm hoping to see improvement in that area. But, that hasn't, I believe, trickled down to the level it needs to get the full buy-in to the program.
But it is accepted by 689 and the other labor unions?
Yes.
Okay. There's an annual report from BTS that's due. What do you expect to be in that report? Is that a summary of issues or what?
I think they could do some trend analysis, what the reporting is, what the effectiveness of the program is, and to my understanding, and this, he really can't hold me to this because it's their report to release, but I'm hearing it should be released somewhere around November.
And this year, the end of this year in December, I believe it said in the background documents that there's an assessment of the program, and is there a decision point that has to be made later this year?
The decision point would be whether we continue, whether we don't continue, or if we do continue, at what terms. So that's a discussion we need to have with the union and BTS.
Well, the items that were on the list were pretty interesting. Are all of these coming from the confidential close call reporting or these other methods? Because in your safety minute, you talked about talking to managers. You also talked about a 1-800 number to report stuff, and then you have the confidential close call reporting system. Are those coming from confidential close call or all three of those sources?
What you saw today is strictly close call.
Okay.
But I just want you to point something out. For example, they talked about the close call with the mirror issue. That was already an item that we had already been moving on. So it's in close call. So what we're also doing, too, is we're scrubbing a lot of the data. So that was one of the concerns I had is there's items in close call that are already being addressed by management. So the issue comes in my mind, we need to communicate that back to the employees so they know that we're moving on these initiatives.
Thank you. I want to go to Mr. Goldman, and then I'll come back to Mr. Dorsey.
Thank you. Andrea and Pat, I wanted to ask some questions to follow up on what you were saying about on the participation in close call reporting. So this has been in effect now since sometime in 2013 for bus, so that's going on three, maybe 4 years and I guess a year, I mean for rail and for a year for bus. What are the number of close call reports in each of those years, 2013, 2014? Do we have that information from BTS?
I have the global information. So the total number since 2013 is 98 close calls. 81 of those are on the rail side, 17 are from bus.
Is there a breakdown? But I guess what I'm trying to get at is just trends. Are we getting increased participation in use of the close call reporting system, or is it sort of kind of leveling out and static, or is it going down?
I believe that's going to be part of the final report, that trend analysis. But I can get you the number by year and by mode.
I guess the issue I was going to is just the relationship between close call reporting and willingness of union members to participate while we have a kind of contentious labor management situation, collective bargaining now reached impasse. Is there any assessment as to whether there's been an increased reluctance of union members from 689 to participate in the system over the last 6 to 12 months?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'd also like to point out that this is only one stream of getting safety complaints. We also get safety complaints through the safety hotline, And I deal with Mr. Charrington's group frequently for OIG complaints about safety that wind up in his court but then get funneled over to me to address it from a safety side of the house. But this is strictly just close call. But there are other reporting mechanisms, and the employees are using those.
Okay. So I look forward to your specific numbers on the trends and what's been happening month by month over the last two or three years. Thank you.
Thank you. So as we think about, you know, first, WMATA was an early adopter with this, as has been described, and I understand BTS is not the, you know, FRA doesn't use BTS. There are other data collection agencies. Can you give us a sense of where BTS is in terms of maturity in this field? Are they as advanced as NASA is on the FRA side or whomever else is doing? I'm sorry, not on the FRA side, but NASA I know does this, FRA does this. Is BTS sort of similarly equipped to those other data collection partners to do this work?
Okay, so with any, you know, apple-to-apple comparison, you're going to have pluses on one side and pluses on the other side. So I think the advantage in this environment that BTS offers us is the SIPC laws with the confidentiality, because there's a real fear of retaliation here. That is true. On the NASA side of the house, I believe, and I haven't vetted the NASA side, I did meet with Mr. Lobby individually to discuss this. Some of the advantages that I believe you get on the NASA side of the house is that the close call reporting system, the process is much more streamlined. And in addition to that, they seem to have, because it's a much larger pool, they may have additional subject matter experts so that you could get a train operator, speak train operator to another individual or signalman to a signalman. BTS kind of relies to some degree on WMATA's internal experts. And my personal opinion is that the other advantage of NASA is you want people who have a broader spectrum or broader worldview of incidents, so you have to weigh that. But I don't think you're going to get there unless you have that confidentiality piece that's needed in this organization.
Fair enough. Thank you. Just reiterate what he said. I've been around since the program was developed and the negotiations that led to the MOU and such, and we did consider NASA. We considered BTS. We looked at different options that were available at the time. This would probably be going back to like 2012, maybe even 2011 when we first started talking about it. And I can't stress enough how important it was to the union to have that SIPC protection. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're our partner. It's not a unilateral decision that we make. And they were most comfortable after we reviewed different options and we visited New Jersey Transit and talked to their joint labor management group about how they felt about the program. That at the time the decision was made to go with BTS.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously a number of years have gone by and it's worthwhile taking another look at what we might get out of a different type of program.
And how many like transit properties have now joined on to the close call reporting? I mean, I know this is very prevalent in commuter rail, but in terms of, you know, urban transit properties, what are we talking about?
Well, I could speak from my experience in New York. We had a close call reporting system. It was not confidential and it was not non-punitive, so we didn't have the best model. I know other railroads in New York, like Long Island Railroad, Metro North, are pursuing the NASA model. So I haven't ever really scoped out what the entire industry is doing.
We've been contacted by Chicago Transit Authority, who's been talking to, I think, probably to BTS as well as NASA. So they're in the process of investigating what would work best for them. They've been reaching out to us a number of times. But I would say we're still in the rail transit industry, the first to do so, and still one of the only.
Okay. And my last question on this is just simply, you know, Mr. Lavin, what you were speaking of at the end, the many mechanisms that people have to report safety concerns, the question is, are we seeing that close call is being utilized a lot to report things that you would prefer to see reported in through other avenues? Granted, we were just looking at some of the management actions in response, but some of those seem like what you would hope to have as the result of normal employee reporting to management about things that they're seeing on the ground without the need for this intermediary layer of confidentiality. So are you finding that this is, while a necessary part of our safety culture, is it sort of flagging a lot of false positives, if you will, in terms of things that you would like to see reported otherwise?
Yeah, I, th- think to your point, if I'm understanding the question correctly, is I see a lot of reports that go into close call that are not close calls.
Okay.
It's issues where, you know, someone's parking in a bus stop, but they don't feel empowered to encounter them because it could be a supervisor. So those are things that we should be able to resolve at a different level, but I'll take the information any way I can get it.
Understood. And do we just have any thoughts about how we can promote a culture that not only gets people to use the close call reporting system for actual close calls, but to utilize all of the avenues available in order to get safety needs voiced to management? Do we have any thoughts about how to actually, we've talked about safety culture forever, and do we have any concrete ways forward to try and, you know, change the dynamics that exist?
Yeah, and I think, I'm sorry.
If I could, I think at a higher level, I think the overall approach that we're taking in managing the system is changing that culture some as well, because I hear things that bring up to me that based on the decisions we've been making, whether it's shutting down service, dealing with whatever issue we have, just the fact that we're dealing with it without even someone bringing it to us is sending that signal, no, just bring it to us. We're not hiding anything. We will deal with it. So I think it's taking down that barrier of people afraid to bring things to us through whatever mechanism. I think this is still a good one to have, because I think some people still feel that confidentiality issue. But the things I'm hearing from people, they're not afraid to tell me
okay.
Anything that's going on.
Thanks.
As you develop the data on close call reporting, I wanted to. Can you hear me? Now, as you develop the data on close call reporting, I wanted to suggest that when measuring the efficacy of the program, you always take into account the progress you're making in other areas. Of course, the incidence of self or close call reporting will presumably drop as you advance your steps to inculcate a safety culture in the organization and the like. So I think it's important to bear in mind that in the event that there is a fall in the absolute numbers of self-reported incidents or close call incidents, that it could be a sign of progress and not a sign of ineffectiveness of your program.
Point well taken.
Let's see. Mr. Spencer.
Thank you. Ms. Burnside, the chart you, or the graph you had there with the roles and reporting process, once a report is made, what's the timeline for that process? Is there a specific timeline for each call? You have so many days after it's reported to submit that final report, or does it depend on the nature of the close call incident?
Well, first of all, if a close call is reported to BTS, and the BTS analyst determines that it's an immediate safety issue, they're going to send that right back to WMATA. So there's, you know, anything that's like a burning issue that is a danger right now isn't really considered a close call.
Okay.
And will be sent back to WMATA. But once an employee files a report within the required time frame, and they would need to leave their contact information, and the BTS analyst will get back to them with, I think they strive to do so within the day, and conduct the interview, and then all the reports that occur within a certain time frame and the initial recommendations or analysis of root cause analysis will be then sent to the PRT, peer review team. The peer review team tries to meet monthly, but it's changeable depending on if they're getting a large number of calls, they may meet more frequently. I think generally not very often, more than a month, but if there's a very low number of calls, they may meet every other month. There's really nothing specific that drives it except the need to come up with the preventive safety actions.
Okay. Any other questions from anyone? Thank you very much. This is a very interesting conversation. That's our agenda for today. Any other business? Seeing none, do I have a motion to adjourn? Okay. All in favor? Aye. We stand adjourned.